The Tom Woods Show, episode 1636.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, there are a lot of people out there who will support you and will buy from you if you accept Bitcoin. But if you've ever wanted to accept payment in Bitcoin and were afraid that it would just be too complicated to figure out and set up, well, I have the solution. A free video series I've assembled that walks you through the process step by step and makes it really easy. Check it out at tomwoods.com/Bitcoin. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. All right, I admit today's episode's going to be all over the place. It's just a bunch of thoughts and impressions, miscellaneous thoughts, and it's going to help me. It's going to be therapeutic for me to record these. Because then, it's kind of like when you have a song stuck in your head, and until something else comes along, that song is still there. I feel like I can't stop thinking about this stuff unless I record it. I don't know. If this doesn't work, well, then I got an episode for nothing. But I do feel like this is going to help me. Maybe it'll help you. I'm not going to definitively solve anything for you today, but I just want to read a few things, talk about a few things to help us think clearly about what's happening right now. So let's start here. For one thing, so far there's been a creepy, cult-like attitude toward science. Now, I know that's going to be taken out of context. I already see it. I can already see it happening. Woods doesn't like science. Okay, that's for the people with the 50 IQ, and that's for the people who just want to smear me. But surely those of you of reasonable intelligence know what I'm talking about. The kind of hushed reverence that people have been taught to have in front of this new priesthood. And they sit obediently and wait to be told what to do. Now, I'm not saying that expertise is not to be valued. I'm not saying that sometimes we ought not indeed listen to the experts because they know more than we do. Those things are certainly true and really are just common sense most of the time. But this goes way, way beyond that. For example, think about the military. We would get told when Trump was thinking about getting out of Afghanistan that he should listen to the generals. The generals will tell him if he should get out of Afghanistan. And No, that's not the job of the generals. The generals will tell you once you're in a war, here's how you win it. And, you know, I say that jokingly, of course, but at least in principle, that's what they're supposed to do. That's their job. Once you're in the war, they will help devise the strategy. But they're not the ones who tell you whether you should be in the war in the first place. That's up to the civilian leadership. You don't go to the generals and ask them a meta question like that. You ask them the on-the-ground questions. How many troops do you think it'll take to win this war? What cities should we target? You ask them questions like that. You don't ask, should we be in this war? Should we withdraw from this war? That is a political question, not a military question. So you don't ask those people. Maybe they have a personal opinion, but it's not worth any more than anybody else's personal opinion. In exactly the same way, we have people who think we should be asking public health professionals if and when we should reopen and how we should reopen. Now, maybe the how we should reopen, it's possible that people who study infectious disease have some input on this. That's true, because they can talk about the extent to which they understand how a disease is transmitted from one person to another. Then that can indeed help us make decisions about reasonable precautions that we should take. But that's a far cry from saying that what people seem to implicitly believe today, which is that public health professionals, so-called, are uniquely positioned to be able to weigh all the costs and benefits of any particular policy. Because yes, you might be able to have some effect by taking this or that extreme measure, but those extreme measures have consequences of their own. And obviously there's no class that public health professionals took in college that helps them to balance all these things. What class is that? I'd like to take that class. It's that they assume that the only goal is the eradication of the disease. Okay, well, surely we would like that, but in the same way that our goal in life can't be the eradication of all deaths, at some point you realize that the damage you do is greater than the goodness of the alleviation that you're bringing about. I remember Martin Feldstein, my economics professor as an undergraduate. He died several years ago. He was an advisor to Reagan. He was like a right Keynesian, you might say. And I remember him explaining to us in class that if we wanted to, we could eliminate all pollution. We could get rid of all the pollution in the world. But we wouldn't want to do that because the result would be absolute devastation all over the world. It would be horrible. At the same time, we don't want to have a river that we die instantly when we take a drink from it. So how do we figure out what makes sense? Okay, so he wasn't saying that human life isn't important, but he was saying that if we speak the way some governors have been speaking, that if it saves only one life, we should do X, Y, or Z, that's not reasonable. Nobody actually thinks that way. Because if it would save only one life, would we really take all the wealth in the world and burn it up and destroy it to save the one life? Are you sure that even on net, on your own terms, that winds up saving lives on net? Because on net, that would obviously kill a lot of other people. This is a very, very difficult thing to make sense of and figure out. So, for example, former Tom Woods Show guest Michael Maresco, or past guest, was just shared the other day on Facebook an article from an academic journal called Social Science and Medicine. And the article is called Losing Life and Livelihood, a Systematic Review and Meta-Analysis of Unemployment and All-Cause Mortality. And it talks about the effects on health and life from unemployment, of which we have a tremendous amount that I personally think has been brought about somewhat cavalierly. The thought being that we can just indefinitely shut down. And of course, the left progressives, these people, of course, they don't have any problem with this because that's how they think the world actually works. That we can just shut down, people don't have to work, and the government can just send people checks. I mean, there are people who think that way. I know the more sophisticated ones don't, but I don't know, you scratch them, and one layer beneath that initial layer does think that way, actually, in my experience. So In the summary, the abstract of the paper, we read this. Unemployed persons were significantly more likely to die than those in a comparator group. The hazard ratio adjusted for age and other covariates was 1.63, showing that unemployment is associated with a 63% higher risk of mortality. The average effect was higher for men than women, with an increased risk of 78% compared to 37%, respectively. Unemployed people in their earlier mid-careers faced an increased risk of 73% and 77% compared to 25% for those in their late careers. And then goes on from there. So I'm going to try to link to as much of this as I can at tomwoods.com/1636. So you have stuff like that. Then we read that a United Nations report is warning, and this is a quotation from the report, economic hardship experienced by families as a result of the global economic downturn could result in hundreds of thousands of additional child deaths in 2020, reversing the last 2 to 3 years of progress in reducing infant mortality within a single year. The United Nations said an estimated 42 million to 66 million children could fall into extreme poverty as a result of the coronavirus crisis this year. And we could go on citing things like this, the mental health hotlines that went from 1,000 calls a day to 25,000 calls a day, stuff like that. But then we have the cultural, the consequences for society. And here's what a friend of mine on Facebook shared, and I agree with this. She says, I will not go along with the social conditioning taking place in this country, the strong push to create a, quote, new normal. And as I said on Twitter, only lizard people use an expression like new normal. Okay? Normal people don't talk like that. So don't you talk like that. She says, we're being taught to be afraid of each other. We're being taught to avoid eye contact and pleasantries. I believe in being friendly, and I hope this doesn't become a lost art. We are being taught that only some of us are essential. All workers are essential, and all businesses are essential to our economy. We're being taught that personal affection should be avoided, that a hug is now an act of civil disobedience. We're being taught to be glued to the media 24/7, hanging on every word in a perpetual state of alarm and fear. We're being taught to snitch on our neighbors. We're being taught to ask for permission to do everyday tasks or to enjoy our God-given rights. We're being taught to accept the surveillance state. The virus will go away, but people will be changed forever. And I think that's a, this is one of the, I guess what bothers me a lot about all this is how cavalierly some so-called public health professionals just tell us that it's going to have to be like this for X number of months or even years. Well, sorry, I'm just going to be like this. Sorry. Wait a minute. Do you realize the damage that would be done not just to the economy? You can't even talk about that to most people because they think the economy is the stock market. The stock market, they have no idea how it works. They have no idea the function that it serves. They're just sure that something sinister goes on there. So they don't care about that. Only the 1% care about that. Okay. All right. Well, as long as you don't care about your 401k and your retirement account, then I guess we don't have to care about the stock market. But it's not just the immediately obvious economic effects. It's the effects on the way we live. It's the effects on people's hopes, dreams, and aspirations. Anything you might have hoped to do, especially as a younger person, is disrupted possibly forever because maybe by the time you're allowed to do it again, you're too old and you got to do something else. I mean, it's time to go off to college and you never got to learn that skill or enjoy that simple pleasure in life. These people who are so cavalier about saying, well, sorry, you just got to stay in your house. Sorry. And if you complain about that, you only care about the stock market. Almost all these people must be losers who've never built anything in their lives, because otherwise I can't imagine anyone talking that way. Everything you've worked for in your life is suddenly being taken from you, and the measures being taken are absurdly arbitrary. Why in heaven's name are drive-in theaters closed down? Drive-in theaters, you don't even leave your car. It seems that you can take reasonable precautions for the time being without doing this, without shutting everything down and basically ruining people's lives. Do you have, and the implication is, well, you just can't wait a short while. It's just going to be a short while. But, you know, and you stupid rubes, you just want to go out to Fuddruckers and get a burger, some comedian on Twitter said. You just want to go out to Fuddruckers and get a burger. Well, first of all, you can get, I'm pretty sure Fuddruckers is open for takeout, so you can still go to Fuddruckers anyway. But of course, the ordinary person whose livelihood is destroyed has to be ridiculed by their betters, right? They have to be told that they're just stupid rubes who want to go out and do that. Anyway, it seems to me you can take reasonable precautions and make an extra effort to protect people who are particularly vulnerable. You can make an extra effort to do that. And people who care for people who are particularly vulnerable can make an extra effort to do the things that all of us are being ordered to do right now. Those people can do those things. Nothing stopping them from continuing to do those things if other people go about their business. But if other people go about their business, then when I go food shopping, I might, okay, it's very unlikely you're going to get it when you're food shopping. But all right, well, then get food delivery. Then get the groceries delivered. But to say that every single person has to live under house arrest for a year and a half, which is what some of them have been saying, by the way. That is not a straw man. They're absolutely saying that. I've already written about Zeke Emanuel, Dr. Zeke Emanuel, whose brother is Rahm Emanuel, who said, yeah, and you're going to have to get used to no income. I'm not joking. You're going to have to get used to no income, not seeing your friends and extended family. Well, no, you know what? No, I don't believe in redistribution. I don't believe in wealth redistribution, and I don't believe in life redistribution. I don't believe that you can take a year and a half of some people's lives and think you can redistribute it to others. This is extremely crude on many levels, but I don't think you have the right to do it. And incidentally, when you say we'll try to protect the vulnerable, then you get from the people who supposedly are following the science. Oh my gosh, if I get told to follow the science one more time. All right. These are the people who you say, well, look, it's obviously the elderly are most vulnerable here, and we've got to think of ways to help them in particular. You get told, oh, no, even young people die from it. These are the scientists, by the way. These are the people who follow the science. Yeah, I know. I know I can find a few outlier cases. That's true. But this is like saying men are generally taller than women and coming back with, what are you talking about? My wife is 6'1". But that's the level of the response. And these are the people lecturing us about science. They're going to take a few outlying cases and draw sweeping conclusions from them that are completely unjustified and make it seem as if the picture is actually very murky. It's not murky. But we're the unscientific ones. They're basing their position on emotion and anecdote, but we're the unscientific ones. All right, more to come in just a minute, but let me pause to tell you this. Folks, there are things we each look back on and think, how did I get that so wrong? Like, remember when you used to think buttonfly jeans were a good idea? Yeah, here's a process I want to make as complicated and time-consuming as possible. Well, we're always going to get things wrong. That's just life. But there are also things we can get right on the first try, like shopping for life insurance, and that's where Policy Genius comes in. Policy Genius makes finding the right life insurance a breeze. I've used it myself, and in minutes, you're comparing quotes from top insurers and finding your best price. You could save $1,500 or more a year by using Policy Genius to compare life insurance policies. And Policy Genius doesn't just make life insurance easy. They can also help you find the right home and auto insurance or disability insurance. So even if, particularly under Woods's ridicule and prodding, you've come to decide, yeah, those buttonfly jeans were a terrible idea, you'll never be distressed or embarrassed about life insurance with Policy Genius. In just a few minutes, you can find your best price and apply at policygenius.com. We all get things wrong from time to time. At least we can get life insurance right with Policy Genius. All right, let me say a little bit more about people who follow the science, people who claim to support the science. You got to listen to the science and what the science says about it. Okay. Well, they tell us that the numbers of projected deaths have been continually revised downward because we've been doing such a super job at social distancing. Even though that main Washington model, their University of Washington model they're talking about, assumed that there would be 100% compliance with social distancing. It already assumed that. That was already worked into the model. So that, the reason that they're being revised downward is not that we're doing so much better. It assumed we would be doing perfectly. It's that they overshot to start with. Or how about this? Supporters of the science told me that when last month Hong Kong was reporting a doubling of, quote, confirmed cases, I should start expecting deaths within a couple of weeks. It's always just wait 2 weeks, right? Then the peak is going to come, or then at least disaster is going to come. So, all right, well, it's been 4 weeks later, 4 weeks since Hong Kong was reporting a doubling of confirmed cases, and the number of additional deaths since then is zero. Then I ask people about Vietnam. How come Vietnam has had zero deaths from the virus? Zero. Or from the disease that the virus causes. Why have they had zero deaths? And everybody is so dying everybody wants to live in a world where there's just a glib, easy answer to everything, that they're all tripping over themselves to give me the glib answer, which was, oh, well, they got a jump on it early, and they traced people and their contacts, and they did this and that. And they're so eager to make sure that I understand that they've got a simple comic book explanation for everything. Like, they don't want to admit that maybe there's some mysteries here. Let's just admit it. It's okay. It's okay to admit that there isn't a glib answer for everything, that some things are mysterious to us. And so, no, it's not obvious that the United States is going to be Italy, and it clearly hasn't been. So people who just scream at the top of their lungs, we're Italy, we're wrong. It's okay to say that there are anomalies that need to be explained in terms of places that have an excess number of deaths and places that have, like Vietnam, zero deaths. So people are telling me, oh, that's because they did all this work and they were prepared and whatever. That might explain why there are few cases of the disease. It does not explain why there are zero deaths from the disease. And it doesn't even come close to explaining why there would be zero deaths from the disease. But I got these same answers from so many people. It's like they just have to believe that, well, the scientists have got an explanation for everything, and so I've come up with it in 3 seconds for you. Nope. Let's be humble here and say, we don't know. Who knows why? Maybe it's that in Vietnam, for some reason, the elderly haven't been exposed as much or something like that. Maybe it's something like that. I'd like to take a minute now to share with you something that was shared in my private group. Now, I've removed the name of the city involved, but this is written by somebody who is in healthcare, and he writes this. This is from about a week ago from when you're hearing this. I know I've probably said this a kajillion times when posting or commenting about COVID and the potential of hospitals being overrun, but I'm on daily calls about the COVID situation for the hospital system I work for in blankety-blank city. So I get the numbers of cases every day, positives, hospitalizations, ICU patients, etc. The past 3 weeks, we've been providing plenty of anxiety to our clinical staff, telling them that they need to prepare themselves for a huge surge in critical COVID cases that would last for about 2 or 3 weeks, then begin to come down. The goalposts on this have shifted several times. First, it was supposed to be mid-March, then late March. The final analysis we received was that the ascension of our surge was to begin mid last week, with the peak to come about 4/18. Since then, we all know the IHME projections have been drastically revised. We're a major metro area, and while we did have one of our hospital ICUs at 150% capacity for a few days, since then there has been a higher than normal volume of ICU patients, but nothing dire. We haven't used any of the field hospitals we've set up for potential high surges. On this morning's call, the goalposts shifted again. Now, instead of a huge spike, we can expect the current surge levels to maintain for about 4 weeks. The more optimistic outlook was credited to the success of social distancing and shelter-in-place mandates. However, as Tom Woods has pointed out, all of this was built into the original models that said we were heading for the apocalypse. We have not been overrun, and from what I can tell, neither has New York City, which you should expect would be if any region was to be overrun. And by the way, New York is now shipping ventilators to other cities. You would certainly see 24/7 video on CNN if that was the case. I haven't even heard if that naval hospital ship is seeing patients. All that is to say, we continue to live in fear in our homes with millions of jobs disappearing at a pace never seen before and untold financial ruin of countless lives. Yet with both statistical and ground-level reports that all the sacrifices we've made have been for a situation that is nowhere nearly as dire as originally projected, we still don't have a national conversation about getting back to normal life or trying to mitigate any further economic damage. It's really frustrating this story isn't being told, despite the misery that's continued to be piled upon all Americans, even those who are nowhere near New York City, Boston, Philly, or any of the other hotspot areas. So that was in my private group. Then the ensuing discussion after that post included comments like this. Somebody talking about his medical PhD friend. What he is seeing is that all elective medical services have gone to zero. People are afraid to leave their homes, and Wisconsin has one of those infamous stay-at-home orders. The end result is that hospital revenue is crashing and layoffs are about to hit. Then somebody else says, yes, exactly what we're seeing. Probably a higher volume of COVID cases than in Wisconsin, but same as far as all other hospital business being shut down. Basically bleeding money every day we're not allowed to operate. And even if we were, people have PTSD right now and won't want to go near a hospital if they don't absolutely have to. Another person says, I'm an occupational therapist and the hospital system I work at has shut down almost all outpatient centers. The hospital therapists are taking turns being on furlough for 2 weeks at a time due to low census. Yes, there are COVID patients at the hospital and they're being treated by therapy, but there are not many. I haven't been there in a while due to low census, but when I talked to a coworker on Saturday, he said they had 3 wings of the hospital completely shut down right now. I'm in Michigan, the third highest state for COVID. Then in the New York Times, of all places, I read this. Headline, the pandemic's hidden victims, sick or dying, but not from the virus. As the coronavirus overwhelms the healthcare system, reads the subtitle, people with other illnesses struggle to find treatment. And you can get an idea of what this is. So I'll just read a couple quick paragraphs. Early on, as the epidemic loomed, many hospitals took the common sense step of halting elective surgery. Knee replacements, facelifts, and most hernias could wait. So could checkups and routine mammograms. But some conditions fall into a gray zone of medical risk. While they may not be emergencies, many of these illnesses could become life-threatening, or if not quickly treated, leave the patient with permanent disability. Doctors and patients alike are confronted with a worrisome future. How long is too long to postpone medical care or treatment? There have been numerous articles in mainstream publications in the UK about cancer treatment, a vital cancer treatment being stopped because of this coronavirus priority. So that's, in fact, there was an article up on, let's see, where was it? They took it down, express.co.uk, which is the home of the Daily and Sunday Express, so totally mainstream. They had an article the other day saying that the disruptions to cancer treatment caused by all this emphasis on COVID-19 will cost more lives than COVID itself. Now that article's gone. Now, I don't know, maybe it was all wrong, in which case you publish a retraction or you correct the error. It's just disappeared. Now, I'm not one of these people who gets crazy about stuff like this, but that is a little weird because I can find other articles corroborating this claim all around. Let me finish up by sharing one more thing somebody who belongs to my group wrote the other day. I just leave it with you as food for thought. She says this: "I relinquish any claim on the lives of the young. As an oldster who is presumed to be peculiarly susceptible to the ravages of COVID-19, I will not ask anyone to sacrifice days, weeks, or months of their time, love, life, and livelihood on my behalf. It is grotesque for the old to ask the young to sacrifice for them. Go, live your lives. Enjoy the beautiful spring weather. I have no claim on you for my welfare." Who among my fellow oldsters will release any claims on the lives of young people? Something to think about indeed. Now, chances are you are surrounded by snitches, crazy people, hysteria mongers, team apocalypse everywhere. One place that has been, now we have some difference of opinion in there. I'm not going to deny that. But we've at least been able to have rational discussions, which is more than you can say for most of the planet right now, in my private group. So if you have been thinking about joining the Tom Woods Show Elite through my Supporting Listeners program, this is a great time because it will help keep your sanity. And you'll read a lot of interesting news articles that you wouldn't find otherwise. You'll get some interesting numbers. We have somebody in there tracking the situation in Sweden for us every single day. All kinds of interesting stuff in there that will help keep your sanity and keep you informed. So if you like and appreciate what I'm doing, and if that particular benefit of the many benefits you get as a supporting listener is attractive to you, then do please head over to supportinglisteners.com, and I will be delighted to welcome you in there. Thanks for listening.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.